Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I'm going to devote this entire hour to you. One of these no-guest shows where I basically answer your calls for what I call a three-minute career makeover or a workover, and intersperse that with some what I think are tips that are likely to be useful to you, whether you're unemployed, self-employed, a manager, an individual contributor, large company, small company, government agency, nonprofit, etc. So without further ado, if you have thought about calling into the show to try to get some free advice about your career or that of someone you love, I will give out the phone number right now, and this is a good time to call before the lines fill up, and that way you won't have to wait on hold and all that stuff. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 483-Minute Workover, Career Makeover. And by the way, if you want to, one of the things you might want to do is so many people who are seeking jobs these days, you know, what's critical is not so much a 30-second pitch, but what I call a 5-second pitch, being able kind of a soundbite. I hate the word brand, but your brand, you know, what you're looking for, why you're so good, et cetera. If you want to run your little pitch by me, a 5-second, 10-second, 30-second, you know, what they call elevator pitch, I'll give you my candid reaction and tell you if I'd hire you or not hire you, or be inclined to interview you or not. For all those reasons, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's see, what else can I do before we get started? While waiting for the calls to come in, I had actually promised when I recorded the promo last week for this week's show that I was going to talk about ways to boost office morale. And I have some of my own ideas on the subject, but I came up with, found an article of all places, something called businessinsurance.org. I guess they're trying to drive traffic to their insurance site by posting some high-quality articles about career and workplace issues. And so this was one of them, and it was called 8 Proven Ways to Boost Office Morale. I won't share all of them, but I'll share those that I think are not obvious and of value. Number one, something I did talk about a few years ago, get a dog. This week, I was a consultant to The Gap, and in the course of conversation, they mentioned that one of their divisions, Athleta, it's the new women's sports clothes division, dogs are allowed. And they said it is invaluable, and it's something I've heard again and again. In workplaces that have dogs, of course, there is going to be the aberrant situation where a dog has fleas. The dog owner is therefore not responsible in having done flea prevention, or somebody is scared of dogs or cats or allergic to the dander or whatever. And those, but in general, the companies that I've heard that have pets allowed in the workplace, generally they deal with those anomalous situations. But the general policy is, you know, as long as they are well-behaved, as long as the worker next to you in the next cubicle is not, you know, allergic and furious about it, generally pets are allowed. And I cannot think of a way, and again, I must admit I'm biased because I love my doggy Einstein, I cannot think of a better way to improve office morale than allowing pets in the workplace. I remember working at another, doing some consulting at another company, and the most vivid memory I had was of somebody having their iguana, one of these large lizards, in a terrarium at their desk. So it's not even just dogs and cats. We're not speciesist anymore. We allow all pets in those situations. So that's, I think, a great way to improve morale, again, without costing anything. You know, sometimes employers figure that the way you boost morale, you have these big blowout parties. I remember when I was at KGO, I was hosting the show for a couple of years at KGO, and they would have like 2 or 3 times a year, they would have these fancy parties. One of them, I'll never forget, was on Pier 39, I think it was on Pier 39, at a fancy restaurant. And they were serving these very upscale hors d'oeuvres and the open bar with the bartender. I'm sure they were spending a fortune. I'm not convinced that that produced morale enough to justify the cost. And in fact, KGO is in deep doo-doo financially. They keep selling it, and the radio station's owned by somebody else now, and it's now a Cumulus station and changing formats. I am not convinced that big blowout parties are the best way to go. Now, I am not saying that there isn't the need for celebrations. I think simple little celebrations in the break room of somebody's birthday or an accomplishment or whatever attaboys and attagirls are definitely a way to improve morale. But I do not think spending money, and especially, you know, sometimes even the company picnic, candidly, those offsites when you feel, oh, boy, I better show my face on a Saturday afternoon when I'd rather be doing either with my family or my recreation or whatever. And I got to be, you know, not only do I have to show up to the company picnic, but of course, as we all know, just like Christmas parties or company picnics, you've got to be on your best behavior. It's like you're really at work again and you're on display again. I don't think that those boost office morale. Little 15-minute during lunch hour or at break time, little celebrations that are low cost, could be even potluck. At my wife's workplace, they dress up for Halloween. That doesn't cost anything, and it does boost morale. So that's another tool that I like, which is, in addition to the doggy idea, that is Pet's idea, I like the idea of having low-key, small little celebrations ongoing rather than big blowouts. I don't want to blow out your interest in calling, so if you would like a 3-minute career makeover, a workover, you or someone you love has got a work-related problem, either because you're already grown up but you still don't know what you want to be when you grow up, or you're having a problem with your boss, or you're a boss and you're having a problem with your supervisee. Maybe you're self-employed and would like to take your work, your business to the next level, or maybe you're deciding you've got an idea and you're not sure whether we need another burrito stand. Anything related to your work life is fair game, and certainly the price is right. I like to call it zero zippo nada for a 3-minute career makeover or a workover. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Another morale booster that may not be so obvious, and I'm sure that there are going to be some employers who are going to be annoyed at me for saying this. I think there should not be a prohibition against browsing the internet on work time. So often we need a 2 or 3 minute break, not the officially mandated 10 minutes on the hour or whatever, but we need a break, or we're just curious, our brain, hey, we're thinking about buying this item and we want to spend 2 or 3 minutes shopping on the internet or checking the sports score. There's no reason why there needs to be that much micromanagement of people's time that doing a little browsing on the internet should be prohibited. Again, I do, thinking back at KGO, there was somebody who will remain nameless who during, I'll just say, a show, somebody's show, he was supposed to be a producer of that show. And he would be looking at all kinds of things on the internet, not paying attention, listening to what the flow of the show is going, what things maybe the host might do differently. Then, you know, that takes it too far. But the notion of an absolute prohibition against, quote, surfing the internet, an old phrase now, I think is misguided and overly invasive. And I think that allowing little humanities like that are the kinds of things that boost employee morale. Now, this one, each of the ideas I've mentioned so far for improving office morale are pretty easy. They're no-brainers. They don't take any money. They don't take a lot of time. This one's a little harder, but it's so central to office morale that I think it's worth mentioning. Employees hate cube farms. There is no privacy. We hear people's conversations. We smell the food they're eating. It feels dehumanizing. And I am well aware that office space is very expensive. And so for efficiency purposes, companies to survive need to create cube farms. But I would invite employers to consider maybe allowing more telecommuting, so there aren't as many workspaces needed, and therefore some of the spaces created could be made a little more private, a little larger, maybe even with portable, whatever those are called, those 5x7 foot screens, and yes, a few more private offices, and maybe a larger common area, but that mixed use, if you will, office plan, I think it's a great way to improve morale. I remember coming into a workplace where there was literally, and this was a really liberal, progressive, this guy, I can even say it, I guess. He's the guy who started Elephant Pharmacy, and he also started Real Video. And I come into his place, the place is no longer in existence. I come into his workplace, he had some new business, I don't remember what it is. There were like 40 cubes. Everybody was in these cubicles. It was like the gulag. It felt, you know, I'm exaggerating, but it felt like the gulag. Think about if you are a boss, if there's some other way to at least reduce the number of those. Anyway, you want a three-minute career makeover, got a work-related problem? Either it doesn't have to relate to office morale. It could simply be because you're looking for a job, or you want to run your 30-second elevator pitch by me. You're having a problem with a boss, a coworker, a self-employment idea. I'll give you my thumbs up or thumbs down. The phone number for a three-minute workover on Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. Hello, it's you.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, my name's Suzanne, and I have been a tattooist for 21 years.
You've been a what? I didn't hear that. You were a what for 21 years?
A tattoo artist.
Oh, okay.
And I own my own studio. I've mentored a couple people. You know, I have two employees. At this point in my life, I'm 47. I don't see myself tattooing when I'm into my 60s, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, my retirement plan is not set up enough for me to retire when I'm, 50 or 60.
Okay.
And I was thinking, I have a degree in sculpture and art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking of going back to school and getting my master's so I could also teach painting as like a second career. And also that's something that I can imagine doing when I'm older. But at this point, school seems so expensive and there's no mm-hmm. guarantee that, you know, I could get a job when I get out.
Far from a guarantee. Most people who go to art school never even make up enough money to even pay back their student loans.
I know.
They take a huge loss of money and of the time that they could have spent earning money. It's normally a very... You know, it's lottery, not lottery, that's too strong,
yeah.
But it's a real long shot. It's unless you're independently wealthy, don't need the money, have somebody supporting you, especially at 47 when you don't have anything in your retirement system. It is it can work out, but it is certainly a very risky option. Let me ask you a background question. To what extent do you believe that the tattoo industry is continuing to grow or is peaking or is it starting to decline?
I don't feel like it's starting to decline. I feel like it's changing.
Tell
like
me more.
It's becoming more specialized. Like, people are seeking out artists that specialize in certain styles, especially mm-hmm. in San Francisco. It's a little more sophisticated than the rest of the country.
Is your style, do you have a gift in a certain style that is likely to become more popular over the next decade?
Yeah.
Tell me about your style.
I'm more illustrative, so I can pretty much draw any idea that anyone has.
Wow, great.
Yeah, so, you know, it lends itself to, like, different styles of tattooing. Mm-hmm. So, I can accommodate most customers.
Suzanne, let me ask you this. To what extent is the ability to do that... I'll say this first as an I statement. I am a musician, a professional pianist, but... that does not translate into art ability. I can really, literally draw no more than stick figures. My father was a very good artist. I cannot draw more than stick figures. How much do you believe you can train artists to do as good a job of what you describe as illustrative tattooing?
Right.
How likely are you to be able to do that well?
Well, I have trained a couple of people. I look for a person who already has a certain mm-hmm. Level of artistic skill, mm-hmm. and then I teach them to tattoo from there. And I've done that to a couple of people. So
good. Forgive me for interrupting. It's because I like to try to make the most of our time. It's not to be rude, believe me. To what extent do you believe that you are also expert on the business side? Because so much... You know, I feel very sorry for all the arts wannabes, whether they be voiceover people or comedians or musicians or actors. The people who make the money are the trainers of the wannabes. And unless they also have the entrepreneurial or business, not only skills, but the attitude to spend a significant amount of time on the business side, on the marketing side, they're just going to be paying you money and they're going to be even more broke than the starving artists normally are. To what extent do you believe you have... a lot of expertise and teaching ability on the business side of running a tattooing business?
I wouldn't say that I'm the best business person, for sure. Like, I'm not... you know, I can keep things afloat, but I'm not great at making money.
Well, here, I'm going to propose something which I want you to push back on because I'm not sure I'm right, but it's a starting place for our discussion, Suzanne. Let's say I said I want you to pair up with somebody who is the master of running a business on the business side of tattooing. And what if I said, for now, you're only 47, you're not 67, I want you to, as a sideline, create a small school, either join a school or start a school of tattoo.
I want to stop you right now because schools are so frowned upon in the tattoo world.
Interesting.
Especially right now, there was like a TV show that was like Tattoo School or whatever.
Yeah.
And like every shop in the United States was boycotting that because, you know, it's been one of the things where you mentor someone.
Interesting.
You take apprentices on. It's really an old-fashioned thing. And like it's to take it on as just something that you're going to bank on, teaching people. And
got
you know.
It. Okay. Next idea. Just a thought.
Okay.
What about, because you're not a good businesswoman, I'm wondering if it's time for a totally new phase in your life. You said you want to go to get the master's in art so you can teach art. What if I said I want you to hire a consultant to help you build, who's a really master at the business side of tattooing, build your business so that it's worth enough that you could, 1, 2, 4 years from now, sell it. And then with the money you derive, both from the 4 years of income from additioning to work and additional income that you'd have to be showing in order to sell the business, and then the sales price for the business, now you've got a nest egg that can both fund your retirement and take some of the pressure off in terms of finding a new career. How do you feel about that?
That sounds a lot better. That sounds more.
Okay. Do you? I'm not going to let you off the phone quite yet. First of all, do you know the human being on planet Earth who you think might be the best consultant for you about how to improve the numbers, the income, while still being ethical, the profitability, the number, the bottom line dollars that you'd get from your tattooing business?
No, I do not.
Okay.
I'm all artists.
Right. But is there a highly successful, and we should not be in San Francisco because they'll view as you a competitor.
Right.
But let's say in Los Angeles. Is there a tattooing studio or artist where maybe they were so successful in their first store, they opened 2, 3, 4, now there's 8 or 10. Is there somebody like that in L.A.? Do you have any idea?
No. I mean, I know there's artists that are, like, really well-known and...
That's not what I'm interested in. Sometimes they're well-known because of their art or whatever, because they hire a good PR person. I'm interested in somebody who really knows how to run a business so well that he or she continues to open up more stores in their geographic area.
Yeah, I don't know of any shops like that, like chains. Like, I don't know of any...
That's what I'm going to encourage you to do when you get off the phone. I'm going to encourage you to Google Tattooing Los Angeles. Now, why, you know, just simply Googling it, he or she, the business that comes up very high in a Google search probably has got a very search engine optimized website, which means that they're already, clearly that's one indicator that they might be a good business. So I'd encourage you to do some research on that. But before I do that, let me see if I can, right here in this phone call, come up with at least one tip for you for how you might make more money in your business. Would you like me to do that?
Yes.
Okay. So, I want to hear about if there are many different ways to market. Is there one method that you have used to market that has been most successful for you, or you don't market at all?
Well, the best market has been when I tattoo someone and do a great tattoo, and then their friends see it and are like, wow.
Okay.
I want to get touched by that person.
Do you have a mailing list? Do you have a list of either the phone numbers or the email addresses of your customers? Great.
Yeah.
What at this point, what do you do to use that? Do you keep contact with them or do you not?
I haven't. In the past, I've when I first moved here, after the first year of being here, I sent out postcards to everyone, and it actually, you know, it's something I kind of forgotten about.
Right.
I sent postcards out to everyone, like nice ones that I'd made, and it actually brought people back in who I hadn't seen in a while.
Right.
So.
I think the postage is too expensive, and we're beyond that. But I do think that a carefully crafted either newsletter, or discount coupon, which you could also use, you know, do it through Groupon, do it through Yelp discounts, do it directly through your own direct emails, but in a consistent email campaign. See, I like the idea of a newsletter where you've got the three coolest illustrative tattoos that you did this month, and every week you create, you send that email to folks. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and yeah, newsletter makes a lot of sense because it's also like just, you know, clues people in on the happenings of the shop in general. Because, you know, I can only do so many tattoos, and I'm pretty busy. I have two other artists, so I could, you know, maybe keep them busy too.
Are they good enough artists? Do you have the right people? Because if you get... Oh, they're great. Okay, good. Now, many people might suggest you create a website. Assume you don't have a website, or you would have told me. So, do you have a website?
Oh, yeah.
You do. Okay. I am not, I have too often, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, creating a website was a great idea. It was very cost effective. But there are so many damn websites that I don't ask you to spend a lot of time and money building that out. But you can do double duty by when you say you're going to be sending out emails to folks and you've got to say the three best designs of the month, you can certainly archive all of those on your website because there's nothing like samples to prove that that you're good. Does that seem like a good strategy? Reinvigorating your ongoing communication with them with a text, with a graphic-centric newsletter, and archiving the best the best tattoos online and on in that period. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds like a really good idea.
All right. Well, I'm glad.
I'm also to just keep reminding people, like, hey, send your friends here.
That's right. Can't hurt.
You know, you can only tattoo one person so many times, you know?
Right. Do you feel comfortable giving them, when they come in, as a way of saying, tell your friends, here is a 20% off coupon for anybody you bring in?
I wouldn't give
a coupon. Is that too commercial?
Yeah, I wouldn't give a coupon so much. I do like to give personalized things. Like, we make different cards all the time, so people have new art every time they come in, and but and you know, I do feel comfortable like giving someone, you know, a stack of new cards, like, here, do you like this drawing? Here's
the reason I'm hot on the 20% discount is because it does give them an incentive to show it to somebody, or or even something. This may be too commercial because I don't know the tattooing world.
It's a little commercial because people really are looking for just great artists that they're like, whoa, because they don't
right.
Like, money's not the issue. Everyone's
right.
Or pricing. It's more like, I want the best job I can get.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, very good. I'm really glad you called, Suzanne, and I wish you the best of luck.
And thanks for your help.
You're most welcome.
Some good ideas. Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
Yeah, if you would like some good ideas for you, either in your self-employment or you're working for somebody else and you hate your boss or you hate your coworker or supervisee, or you're looking still not sure what to do with your work life and you're scared. That's the big word that I'm hearing more now than I ever have in my career in the last few years. I have heard the word, I'm scared, I need security. More than anything else, in the old days, you know, I would hear, you know, I really want to follow my passion. I want to find something new and wonderful. Now it's I'm scared, like this previous woman, like Suzanne said, I don't have anything for retirement. I'm worried I'm not going to make enough money. How do I find a stable job? And now we're, you know, a couple of years ago, I used to say that it was, you know, go to the government. But now even the government is downsizing. I just looked at the most recently released unemployment statistics. And indeed, the number of government employees is now finally down because tax revenues are so down. If you need some career help, I would like to provide it. If you'd like to run your elevator pitch by me, which is so critical as you network and as you interview, we need to, and I hate the word, but you need to brand. So anything related to your work life, I'd be happy to try to help with by doing what I call a 3-minute career makeover or workover. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And as I was promising, we're in between these calls. I am sharing with you some ideas, and I've been sharing some ideas about ways to build office morale. And some of these are coming from an unlikely place. pretty smart, actually. This place called businessinsurance.com, I think. And they were smart enough to try to drive traffic to the site by having really outstanding articles related to business. And this was one called 8 Proven Ways to Boost Office Morale. So here's another one that they mention, and it says relax the dress code. And boy, is that true. I was, as I said earlier, this week I was a consultant at The Gap. And I guess not surprisingly, because they specialize in informal clothes, they do not have formal dress codes. You don't see even the suits, you know, the people who are the big shots. They're not in suits. They are in an open collared sports shirt and a pair of chinos of some sort, something like that, male and females. And it's a very relaxed atmosphere. Now, I can't say that's all attributable to that. But I know that if I've got to come in a jacket and tie somewhere, it kind of subtly makes me feel like, you know, I am working for the man. I have got to put on this costume, this suit to create the right impression. If I'm wearing what I feel comfortable wearing, you know, and it's certainly not strangled by a tie, which is really constraining. I hate it. I think it creates, it's a no-cost way to create a nice work environment. And it doesn't just have to be casual Fridays. I don't think there's any reason it can't be casual Mondays through Fridays. Now, I'm well aware that certain industries, like the finance industry, you need to show your credibility and not a crook. So, you know, you're supposedly wearing a suit makes you look credible. I don't think so. Actually, it makes me more suspicious. You know, or corporate lawyers, especially when they're meeting a client, they want, if they're to justify the $300 to $500 an hour, they feel they better wear a suit for credibility. You know, it's like the doctors have to wear a white coat. We are very visual. We get seduced by things like that. But all things being equal, I think one of the great ways you can improve office morale is to have a dress as you will dress code. Yeah, take a lesson maybe from all those computer geeks in Silicon Valley who work in T-shirts all the time. I don't think that makes them less effective. All right, phone number here for a three-minute career makeover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi.
Yes, I'm one of those government workers undergoing downsizing.
Yeah.
I'm actually one of the last bureaucrats standing in my division, and I'm not sure whether to stay or go, because being one of the survivors, it is providing comfort, safety, security, but there's also the overload and the lack of morale in the organization in general.
Yeah. Well, if the first thing that comes to mind is, can you, you know, once you're an employee, you've got a lot of seniority rights, you've got rights to stay employed. Have you made all efforts to stay within that government agency or within that level of government, state, federal, whatever, local, and try to make a move? Because if you got a workforce that's overworked and the morale is crappy, it's pretty hard to fix that. Have you made all efforts to try to move to a different agency or some different office while still retaining your retirement plan and job security?
Within our organization, it's been downsized so much that my career path just 2 years ago was to become the next level management. But now, because of the downsizing, two divisions were put together. And so there's really nowhere for me to go within my organization. And that's the rub. Do I stay with the security, or do I leap out into another the private sector or another public agency?
Probably the private sector tends to be very suspicious of government employees, because they really do, rightly or wrongly, believe that government employees work for government. Yes, because they want to make a difference, but that they're driven primarily more by the fact that they have great job security, and that, you know, performance is not going to be, you know, whether your performance is just minimal or great, you're going to get the same salary unless you get a promotion. So the private sector is tough. The normal way that people respond in this situation is they don't quit, but they start to put feelers out. And, have you done that?
Yes, I have. And I've been, you know, at the interview level, and then decided, well, wait a minute, I think I better stay here where I have seniority, because all of the other organizations are, you know, cutting the benefits, so that, you know, you the benefits now for any new employee practically in any public agency are probably half of what you have as a person with more seniority.
Right. Let's and are you working at the, you know, I gather you don't want to tell me what agency you work for, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell me whether you work for the state, feds, or local?
A local. And one of the other issues in our area is that the vision about what we used to do in our public service has sort of been diluted by all of the crises over the various budget problems, the redevelopment agency collapse. And so you know, where 2-3 years ago, not only were there more people to do the work, but the work was much more visionary, and now it's just very much like survival mode.
Now, let me, I gather, since you say redevelopment, you're housing related. So, if I said that I'm going to move to a very more conservative stance, not politically conservative, but a less risky stance, what if I said that the very fact that they have downsized so much and consolidated ultimately gives you a measure more power, and whether in your current job or the job to which you aspire, what if I asked you to at least, if this would be my way, it may not be your way, I would write a white paper saying three visionary ideas for tough times in San Francisco Housing Authority or whatever it is. And I would send that to the very highest levels and acknowledge that in these times, these may not be realistic, but it is important that we don't lose sight of the really wonderful ideas that ideally could be generated, so that if indeed things turn around, we are ready to move forward. Would that kind of a document both inspire you a bit, be a good way for you to sell your brand, and so that you wouldn't be just doing kind of survival crap, working long hours but not doing anything really interesting? Or is that just not you or not realistic?
No, that sounds like an actual good idea. I think that it sort of will remind them of where we were before all this stuff happened.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And be really smart. Don't just look back to what was. Not just remind them what was. But take into account there's a fancy word called vectors. Vectors are forces. There are forces operative today that may not have existed a number of years ago. I don't know what they are in housing. But it could be a greater emphasis on, I'm just thinking a few years ago, mixed-use housing, or more for, you know, affinity housing, people who are suffering with cancer or whatever. Think about what are the factors that are truly cutting edge today. And remember, there are certain states that, unlike California, are actually in growth mode. Because with the energy crisis, states like South Dakota, of all places, and Pennsylvania, because they have a large oil shale reserve, are really relatively booming. And there are countries like Brunei, of all places, because Brunei has a huge amount of oil. They have the luxury to do all kinds of innovative, exciting things. So look not to the past just, but look to the where there is discretionary money around and where there is visionary behavior in areas related to housing, and use those in addition to the visions of the past. Look to the prospects for the future, the ideal best practices of the future, to create this document, which will make you seem very circumspect. Does that make sense?
Definitely.
Okay. All right. I want to thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you.
Okay, you take care. Love helping you out. So if you know, whether you're in Azerbaijan, Zambia, or Brunei, or more likely in San Francisco, and you'd like some career help, I welcome your calling. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko for what I call a 3-minute career makeover. Anything related to your work life or someone you love, self-employment, employment by others, government sector, private sector. I am an equal opportunity helper. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. In between calls, as I've been saying, that I've been offering some tips for improving morale. This is another one that's not obvious that I really like. And maybe, again, this is just because there's something called confirmation bias, where we tend to pay attention to the things that we ourselves do and like. I do. It's a miracle I don't do it more often here on the radio, but I curse. I think because I was a nerd my whole life, I tended to curse as a way of seeming like I was cool. And so, actually, and I do curse with in front of, you know, not my born-again Christian clients, but many of my clients. And they actually find it disarming brilliant. It makes people relax in the same way as a relaxed dress code can make you relaxed. Swearing a bit. I'm not saying you want to swear at people at work, but mixing in an F word or an SH word, as appropriate in a fun way, this is an F great idea, can actually build relationships in the workplace. It can actually make people feel good. Actually, a British study found that profanities that aren't used in a negative or abusive way do boost morale and decrease stress. So just another no-cost way of improving morale in the workplace that perhaps doesn't often get discussed. I'll give out the phone number again. You want a 3-minute career makeover, 415-841-4134. And now let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello, Marty?
Yes.
Hi, yeah. I have a question, and, my niece is going to be moving here from the East Coast and moving out here to the West Coast, and she's a massage therapist, and I know that the market's, like, oversaturated with people out here, but I was just trying to figure out, like, the best way to get her started. I mean, she just got recently licensed and everything. She's really great. I don't even know how she would even start. I mean, she's moving to a brand-new area. How would she put out the feelers in order to kind of get into it?
Yeah, my ways would be massage, like, for somebody like me who doesn't have any health problems, is just, a luxury, and I'm cheapskate. I don't even allow myself doing it very often. But for some people, like people with cancer, you know, who have muscle problems that from the cancer impinging and other kinds of things, for them, massage is essential. And even people who've had plastic surgery, they often use massage to decrease some of the pain, increase the blood flow. So I think medical massage may be, and yet it's kind of a gross app. People go into massage, they think of, oh, these nice, happy people who are simply wanting to get, you know, really reduce their stress. For me, you know, especially in this economy where recreational, if you will, massage is an expensive discretionary item, I would focus on the niche where massage is really essential, and that is medical. And I would have her talk to, for example, rehab clinics and see if they need a good masseuse. I think there'd be less competition because it does gross out a lot of the people who are thinking about recreational massage. And it's more likely to, A, pay more and fewer people competing. That's my best thought.
Okay, great. So a clinical setting would be the kind of the route you would direct her into.
Yeah, and because I don't know, you know, what I would do, because I just mentioned rehab centers as a possibility, but it may be oncologists, maybe plastic surgeons, maybe other kinds of things that I'm not even aware of in a medical setting that where it would be useful. So I would start by Googling the term medical massage.
Okay.
Or clinical massage. And see where there are niches, where there are opportunities. And maybe there's something in her background that may even make her uniquely qualified or uniquely motivated. So let's say, God forbid, she had a relative who died of some horrible disease and, you know, where massage might have been, if not a cure, might have helped reduce her pain, the patient's pain. That could give her additional motivation to want to focus on that niche so she's feeling like she's on a mission. Make sense?
Makes sense. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Marty. Can I offer a suggestion for a unique job that there's a demand for?
I love it. Absolutely.
Okay. Now, not a ton of demand, but there's not enough people to fill the demand.
Tell me.
So not enough businesses to fill this demand. People who have multiple chemical sensitivities need a lot of help at home, and they can't find enough help. They can, but people they find usually come wearing perfume, so they can't handle any fragrances at all. So if anyone out there is in between jobs and looking for a part-time flexible work with very little competition, if you can get all the, if you don't wear perfumes and you can get all the perfumes out of your clothes and your hair, your personal care products, you'll find a ton of work with these people who need it desperately.
Need domestic work, in other words, house cleaning and things like personal chef or errand doing or whatever, things like that.
Yeah, also decluttering. You can help them assemble shelves, grocery shopping, cooking. Mm-hmm. You can help them research safer products that are safer for them, that are non-toxic. You can be their personal assistant. They're really urgently need help.
You know, I so love people who call with a gift like that. All you're doing is calling to share, and I so appreciate you doing that, you know?
Yeah, I learned about this because I was doing green cleaning for a long time, and I just never used fragrance, and so they just, not only cleaning, but they had me do a lot of other services, and I tried to find more help for them. I could have gotten rich if I could have hired people, hired other help that was fragrance-free, but there's really no one out there. And so, but there is a real need. And now they have there's a real online community out there with people they call it MCS, and you can get in on that network. And these people who have MCS, many of them are highly educated. They come from they've had high-powered jobs, high achievers. They're mostly women. They need someone there who they feel safe around, who can just take care of them in so many ways.
Anyway, I thank you very much for the call. I just got a note of somebody who asked, says, I've been a radio announcer for many years. I want to break into voiceover work and plan to take some related classes in voiceover theater. Any suggestions on breaking into the field? You'll recall that a few weeks ago I did have a show specifically on that with a guest who had written a great book. I think the name of the book was You Are What You Speak or something like that. Just go to my website, martynemco.com, and you will find the name of the guest and the book, which was outstanding. But a couple of things that she said that I want to reiterate here. I am very, and frankly, David LaTulipe was also here at KELW, was also on the show. And he raised, you know, he has tried through, and he does some voiceover work. And he, you know, there are real questions as to whether the, it's like, I remember I was talking about the wannabes, are in many ways paying lots of money that doesn't pay back by paying these schools. You know, these voiceover schools are very, very expensive. And the amount of actual benefit, I can only say if with my brother or sister, I'd have her read that wonderful book that by that author whose name I'm blanking on. But again, go to martynemco.com and look at my past shows and you'll see. But then, in addition, you really do need to have a niche. You know, you need to be an expert at something because, you know, the agents are filled with voiceover people because it's perceived as a career that's very easy to do. And so you've got 10 zillion wannabe voiceover people. You've got to be very distinctive. And I think, and you can work on that by, you know, maybe taking an acting class or whatever. But I think you've got to come up with a niche. And then instead of spending the $7,000 to $10,000 for a demo, there's software available that enables you to create a demo really inexpensively now. And also, unlike in the old days, most of the voiceover jobs, or many, that's not true most, but many are on the internet. If you simply Google voiceover jobs, they're all up there. And you've got to have, these days now, you don't go into the studio. You have your own little home studio, which you can get create very inexpensively. And you've got to send your demos in that way. So those are my thoughts. Okay. Again, if you are looking for a 3-minute career makeover, you need some help with your career, employed or self-employed, whether you're 16 or 76, I welcome trying to help you. The phone number here is 415-841-4134. When I say here, that's Work with Marty Nemco here at KELW, 415-841-4134. And as I've been doing through the show, I've been interspersing tips on how to boost office morale. And this is one that I really do, if I had to, in addition to the things I've said before, which I'll just briefly take as, you know, having, like Athleta does, a dog-friendly work, a pet-friendly workplace, allow people a little time to browse the internet. You don't have to be that, having no policy to that. Choosing, if we can, reducing the number of cubes because they're depressing. Have at least some more open, some closed spaces, some open spaces. Or a relaxing dress code, allowing a little bit of swearing, having little celebrations but not big blowouts. But those ideas came from, as I said, that article, 8 Proven Ways to Boost Office Morale. But if I had to give a 2-minute lecture on how to do that, first of all, I would say we really need to do a better job of inspiring workers. If I were supervising even dishwashers, I think I would try both in terms of the way I treated them, but also what I said. I said, you know, guys, dishwashers don't get any credit. But do you know how critical you are to the health and safety and pleasure of all the people at the restaurant? I value each of you very much. And I want to be here to support you as you need it, but I don't want you to think we take you for granted. So I would try to be inspirational where I could, both in my words and deeds. I also do not believe in one-size-fits-all management. I think we build morale when we treat everybody as individuals. Some people will need very high expectations, and they will rise to it. Others need very low-level expectations, or they'll fail and get dispirited. I would vary the quality and quantity of work expectation to the individual so that all of them felt like they were working moderately hard but not having to kill themselves and had a fair degree of success where I could. Also, of course, where possible, I would try to incorporate employee preferences. I would encourage my employees to come to me and they said, you know, to say, hey, I'd like a, is it possible to redo my job description, or can I take on this additional task, or can I learn this new thing? My goal will be to say yes as much as I could. And then finally, I would also individualize the amount of structure and accountability. Some of my employees would need no supervision, and just you give them the large macro assignment and are left to their own devices. They do a great job. They don't need to report in every week. They don't have the accountability reports. They don't need deadlines. They don't need any of that. They're going to do it. Others need much shorter time frames for their tasks. They need more accountability. And so I do not believe in treating everybody equally. I would treat everybody individually. And I think those kind of things, that kind of the individualized treatment of people, plus really working hard to inspire everybody, I don't care if they're the janitor or the CFO, I think those are great ways to build morale. And so now, back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi.
Hello.
Marty?
Yep.
Hi, Marty. So I guess I need suggestions from you, possibly. The thing is that I originally lived in the fashion industry back in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny to mention Gap and as far as the informality,
mm-hmm.
because, yes, I mean, you show up to work very casually and so forth, and it's not so much about, you know, who is the highest in your office as far as, you know, the CEO or the, you know, designer, assistant designer. Everybody just pretty much works as a team to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess going back to my point is that I feel very intimidated by my resume because I went from the fashion industry coming out to the West Coast to work on a movie, ended up working in trading lumber, and then getting even more deep as far as even construction and running jobs and things. It was actually very exciting, but I would have never in 100 years thought that I would have gone from one extreme to another.
Right.
So currently, I work for you know, a company that handles multiple properties, and I'm very good at what I do. And when I take side jobs as far as, you know, running crews and getting things done, I do very well, and at the same time, excuse me, I'm running, I'm creating a website to have an accessory line, and but as you know, at the same time, I want to move on to a better company that provides actually more benefits and you know, a lot more things that I'm looking for. But when it comes to my resume, I feel very, like I said, very.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, like you're all over the map. You're a master,
exactly.
A jack of all trades, master of all. My first thing that comes to mind, and I'm curious what your reaction is, for right or wrong in our society, the federal government and the state government gives extra consideration to women-owned firms. There are actually set-asides where they can get sole-sourced contracts if they're 51% women-owned. They're also the government, before they give any contract, they're looking to make sure that there are sufficient percentages of women. And so being a woman in a non-traditionally female field in construction, I'm wondering if you could go to companies that make their money by getting contracts from the government, federal and state government. And I think, you know, not answering an ad, because your resume is going to make you look like a dilettante. So you don't want to go that route. But if instead, I'd rather see you make find a list of either the Federal Register or other databases, who's getting the federal, which construction companies are getting federal and state and local government contracts. And you don't have to even mention the word that you're a woman. It'll be implicit. They know what they know how powerful it is being a woman today in terms of getting preferences in contracts. If you go and you say, hey, I'm really good at running construction projects. I've run multiple projects at the same time. I've also seen it from the other side of the table. I traded lumber. I've done actual hands-on. I've slung a hammer. If you say all that and you do it sequentially, you say you started by trading lumber and then moved to construction, then to running jobs, then multiple projects, you show a pattern of ascendancy, which, by the way, you should also recapitulate in your resume, perhaps even deleting the New York fashion stuff and the movie stuff. If you go to those companies that live and die on getting government contracts, I suspect that they're going to want to have you, if only, you know, for the numbers, but you sound like you're very competent in what you're doing. Does that make sense?
it does make sense, but at the same time, when I was talking about my resume, as far as structure, you know, for my resume. So because throughout the years, you know, when I'm running a construction job and then, you know, on the side besides my full-time job where I'm doing two jobs at the same time, as far as the layout of the resume, I can sit with you in an interview and I can sell myself very easily. But when you look at it, people are like, wait.
As I said, you don't have to. Two things. Number one, I want you to, the resume doesn't have to include everything about you. For example, my resume doesn't include that I was, you know, that I was a professional pianist. It's irrelevant to the story. What you want to do is have a construction-specific resume and put all of the, you know, show that ascending set of responsibilities over the years in related to construction, period. And but more important than that is if you are simply answering ads that are advertised, the chances are you're not going to get the job, because once the job is openly advertised in this day and age, it's all over the internet, and you get dozens, if not hundreds, of applicants for a good job. So the admin who's screening the applications is automatically going to screen out anybody who doesn't have the absolutely perfect resume. So I encourage you to get in early in the lifespan of a job opening, and that means simply making a list of 5 or 10 of these contractors who live and die by getting government contracts, and contacting them without regard to whether they have a job listing. You simply...
Exactly. Right? I'm sorry to interrupt, but you actually answered my question, because I am not actually answering... I currently have a job, a full-time job, but I'm not currently answering to, yeah, like Craigslist or anything like that. I'm going actually back to old connections, old companies that were related to old companies that I worked for, and I actually interview, and it went really well. But it was an old friend of mine that I used to work with. So I have to submit my resume by Monday. And you did answer my question, so I need to just do the homework and just focus on the construction and lumber and so forth.
Right.
And leave everything else up.
Right, for this resume. And then, you know, even if you've got a connection and even if you look like you're a likely candidate for the job, it doesn't always necessarily come through. And it may not be the best job. I really think that even before accepting any job, you should make a real effort to make phone calls to and or write a letter that summarizes your construction experience to 5 of the 10 leading companies that do get government contracts, and see, because you may get a better offer in terms of money. You said you wanted to move to a better company, a company that maybe is more professional, pays more, has projects that are more interesting. Don't just, you know, go for the low-hanging fruit. Because you're going to be in this new job for years, you want it to be a wonderful experience. So, you know, yes, tune up your resume for this job interview on Monday, but please also do what I said and contact the these companies, these construction companies that get government contracts. Make sense?
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay. Of course, you know, you sense there was a little sadness in my voice. It does, you know, I'll thank you for the call, but there's a sadness in my voice because, you know, in an era where the unemployment rate for men is higher than for women, even though the studies show that men who work full time work more hours, 6 hours more per week, than women who work 6 hours who claim to work full time, it's sad that there are set asides for women. I've said this so many times before, but when women have the deficit, for example, then they were, quote, underrepresented in engineering. There were literally hundreds of millions of dollars spent to try to increase the number of women engineers. But when men suffered the deficit, whether it be that there are a higher unemployment rate and suicide rate, and, of course, they die younger, we don't see any redress for men. We see more programs for women. I don't understand why there are still set-asides, not only in government contracts for women-owned businesses, but in the Small Business Administration. You want to start a business, there are set-asides for women and not for men. There's something that strikes me as cosmically unjust about that, and I would say that if I was a woman as well as a man. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello?
Yes. How can I help you?
Hi. I want to put my 30-second elevator pitch.
Great. Love to hear it.
Okay. So my name is Julia Arpin, and I'm a holistic doctor at Hope Natural Medicine in Berkeley. I can fix your allergies. I can fix your digestion. And I can fix your hormones so you can feel young, smart, and sexy.
I hate it.
You hate it.
I hate it. I'd give it an F. Pure hype. Because it's so overselling to say, I can fix your allergies. I can fix this. I can fix your hormones. No doctor can fix everything. And it's way too hypey. It can make you sexy. It just seems like a commercial. And especially in the Bay Area, that ain't going to go. I think you want to say, if I were to rework that, I would say I'm an integrative physician. I am an MD, but I also realize that not all the solutions reside in traditional allopathic Western medicine. So I have had some experience in using other modalities that have been successful often in helping people with their allergies, their hormones, and people have had quite a good success rate. That's a much better pitch. Make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Right, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi there. I have 12 years of experience in the fashion industry.
Another fashion person. Okay. What were you doing? What were you doing in the fashion industry?
I have 5 years of experience in women's contemporary design, meaning casual clothing, like on the Bloomingdale's floor, that would merchandise back to premium denim. I have experience in tops and bottoms. I have 7 years of experience in women in men's contemporary as well. I started my career off at places like the North Face and Levi's, went down to L.A. and worked for some more entrepreneurial type companies, smaller companies. The last company I worked for in the Bay Area ended up going bankrupt. I've been out of work for 4 years.
Wow.
I ran into some health problems, partly because I worked way too many long hours and was completely burnt out. I'm trying to get back into the industry. I've had some interviews. I've been able to get my resume into some hiring managers' hands, but I never can get to the final round.
What I think, here's just a thought. Again, when you have a resume that is not super perfect, answering an ad is never going to get you the job, because a four-year gap, you know, they're just going to, they'll either eliminate you at the initial stage or somewhere down the line. They just feel it's too much of a risk. Who knows whether she's still sick? Who knows whether she tried for 4 years to get a job, but nobody wanted her? Or maybe she left out jobs that she actually had and failed at and left it off the resume. There are just too many risks. If I were you, what I would do is, fashion is one of those industries that is not stable. You know, I was thinking about, for example, a company like Levi's, which I really love because they really stake their claim to timeless designs rather than just trying to get people to keep rebuying every season. It just felt...
Yeah, working for them was one of my best experiences in the industry. But I would have to say one of the things that is so super frustrating is I have a job for a year and I get laid off.
I know. Let me finish. Let me finish. As I was saying, the reason for that in part is that the fashion industry is, by definition, it continues to grow earnings by being faddish, coming up with new fad. And people, generally, it's people who are into fashion are very young, and they are looking for the next season's best thing. And so, you know, Levi's in 1975 was hot, but by 1980 it had been, or 1985 it was replaced by the Gap. Now it's, you know, then there was FCUK, and then there was Tommy Hilfiger, and then there was Abercrombie. So my point is that it is a field that is never going to be stable. Everything is, Eileen Fisher was hot back in 2000. Now it's not so hot. So, you know, it's a matter of you've got to expect you're going to be jumping. And what I would encourage you to do is to find out who, you know, Aeropostal, I don't know if Aeropostal is still hot. Whoever is hot now, wherever, frankly, the stock price, look, you know, looking at the stock prices is a great way to see what the future of these companies is. Why? Because people invest in stock today based on what they believe the price will be in the future. And the stock, individual stock's price is the collective wisdom of the entire world betting what the future will be. So I would look at, and there's easy ways to find this on the internet. Just go to the term financial. Whoa, I can't believe it's so late. Oh, my God. Go find the fast-growing companies. The show's over. I got to go. Oh, bye. Oh, I'm so engaged with you guys, I forgot. That's Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, for giving me the polite reminder with the music. And thanks all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. Jeffrey Givens returns to tell how, as a UC Berkeley graduate, she coped with having to be a data entry clerk and what she's done to rise up. She'll also again demonstrate her amazing singing voice. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't. I'm sorry, Joanne.